Hello, Baggies fans. Welcome back to the latest episode of the Baggies Broadcast, brought to you in association with the Kettle and Toaster Man. My name is Johnny Drury, and as always, I'm alongside the ENS's Albion correspondent, Lewis Cox, fresh from a weekend off during the international break. Coxie, how are you, mate? I'm a bit bored. How are you doing?
Are you bored? Well, it's dull, isn't it? The breaks, they always are. But I had the Sunday shift, as you know, which is never pleasant at the best of times. But in the international break, we had to soldier on. Here we are, Tuesday and game Friday. So the light is very much at the end of the tunnel, happily. Luckily, we had the chance just before the break to speak with a few people. Jed Wallace, Tom Fellows being two of them. This morning, I've been writing up some more lovely Tom Fellows stuff that Baggies fans will be able to read pretty soon. And had the odd bit of chatter from Carlos. So it's not been totally silent, but they are what they are, aren't they? It's the last international break till about September next season, isn't it? So here we are. And countdown's on for Millwall, isn't it?
Countdown's on indeed. Thank God it's the last break of the season. Nothing's really popped off over the last week. So we're going to have a little bit of a reflection on the season, look back at some key moments in Albion's campaign up to now, look at some of the highlights in terms of games and goals. Some of the players that have stood out, you know, obviously the majority of Albion's squad have stood out because they've had a really good season so far. We're going to answer all your questions and we'll take a look ahead to the Easter weekend doubleheader. When that one comes around, it signals that the season is almost over and it's going to be a key weekend for Albion. So we'll start with, we're just going to reflect some big moments, really. There's been some big moments throughout the season for Albion in terms of big wins, big moments off the field, with obviously the saga that's been going on there, and some various other bits and bobs. And I know Coxie's been rabbiting away, writing down his top key moments of the season. So I'll hand the floor to you, Coxie, really. We've got five in total. I'm going to pick two. You're going to pick three.
Yeah.
So you start with yours. What's been your sort of top, most significant key moments of Albion's campaign so far?
Yeah, we had a... sort of put our heads together for ideas for this pod, didn't we? So it's just slightly different in the quieter weeks, and obviously thought about, you know, best moments of the season, and it kind of got me thinking. One or two maybe immediately sprung out. We've got another category we're going to discuss later as well, haven't we, which will be some interesting debate, I'm sure. But when I had a proper think, the answer to me was kind of obvious in a way, and I've seen it described, certainly by ourselves as well, as Albion's biggest battle and its biggest match this season, realistically, and that off the pitch. So I've gone with my best moment of the season, my moment of the season. We can talk about debate some others as well, as you mentioned. But I've gone for the Friday night at home to Southampton, where Albion were beaten, but where Shilin Patel from the director's box and his wife were in the stadium for the first time for a match and, you know, took the applause and love from supporters before the game. That was a lovely moment, wasn't it, Johnny? I remember vividly being there in the press box, you know, yourself next to us, and colleague Matt Mayer, chief sports writer, was there too. And we didn't really, it was 15, 20 minutes before the match, I think, Johnny. And, you know, nothing had been told in terms of how it was going to play out that evening. Obviously, we knew Shilin was going to be there. The story in principle of his takeover was 24 hours earlier on the Thursday night. And all of a sudden, sort of applause broke out, didn't it? And kind of everyone was turning their heads sort of upwards, supporters, that is. And just along to our left director's box is there's Mr. Patel and his wife kind of waving, smiling, awkwardly not knowing what to do. He told me subsequently he found the moment kind of... he was shy, really. He found himself quite sheepish in that moment, you know, sort of shunning the limelight. But, I just thought, you know, we hadn't had the official ratification confirmation by that point. You know, it was only in principle. But all intents and purposes, the takeover from Gouch and Lai was happening. And the love felt in that moment, Johnny, was a great moment. So, yeah, that really stood out to me as a memory. I'm not sure about you.
Yeah, it was probably the night before.
Yeah.
In terms of the announcement and how big it was, and, you know, how it sort of, you know, we knew things were coming to a head, but nothing seemingly was materialising at that moment. And then out of the blue, the announcement sort of came, and just a relief probably that evening before, that fans knew that the sort of lie era was over, and, you know, wasn't party time, but it was time to breathe a big sigh of relief.
Yeah, that was 24 hours, absolutely. I know we did, we obviously did an emergency podcast that night, didn't we? We broke the story of Mr. Patel being at the game the next day, and that, you know, things had really advanced to this point where he was coming to watch. And then obviously later that night, the club confirmed in principle the takeover. And then, yeah, 24 hours later, he's in the stadium watching the Albion taking the applause. And yeah, it was a bit of a surreal kind of moment, I think, and few days, because I think Albion fans had, you know, and those connected and involved in a way like ourselves are, had sort of pictured and envisaged the moment and feeling for such a while, given the struggles, you know, the concern, the fears of the club and its finances. And then, you know, we'd had months of sort of negotiations continuing, the red tape being crossed and things being sorted out. And I know we regularly said, you know, this thing is advancing, but, you know, it's not a quick 5 second job. And it felt like it was dragging its feet. And I'm sure supporters and Baggies fans listening to this, you know, will be thinking, well, how long does this take? Get on with it type thing. But then all of a sudden, you know, in a few days, it was like, bang, it's here. And it felt like such a watershed moment to me. And in those few minutes where the fans were clapping, it felt like a lovely, lovely little signal, really. And speaking to Shillen after, he said how much that actually meant to his wife to be there, to have travelled specifically for that, and to have felt something tangible in terms of the love from the supporters and how real it was at the Hawthorns. So I know it's off the pitch. I know it's sort of away from the football, but that's the little moment of the season for me. And let's be honest, we all know that's the most important thing of this campaign by a country mile, albeit the not insignificant factor of promotion is obviously also on the agenda. And there are footy memories that we can get into as well, aren't there? But I'm sure most, to be honest, listening to this would agree with us that, you know, anything sort of relating to the takeover going through has to be the sort of moment or memory or a standout occasion of this season, I would say.
You've got two others as well written down, you know, just talk us through those and the sort of on field ones that, you know, probably some supporters might not sort of look towards at least one of them, but just explain the other ones you got on your list.
Yeah, I think in terms of the best win, maybe not necessarily performance, but what felt to me like the biggest, most significant win, I went for Leeds at home, just in between Christmas and New Year. Albion had already beaten Norwich at home on Boxing Day, hadn't they, by the odd goal. And it was even though it was only 1-0, it was against 10 men, it was a good performance that day, wasn't it, against Norwich. It could and should have been more. Norwich weren't going through the best period at the time, but were comfortably beaten, certainly outperformed. And then there was a massive Leeds test, obviously, a few nights later, wasn't it? Friday night again, I think, from memory. And look, Leeds have been flying, hadn't they, realistically, since September. Albion went to Elland Road in August and Leeds were sort of just finding their feet, but they'd been flying by the time they rocked up in the Black Country. And what a 1-0 win it was. That graded Ian Garner first half winner. Again, not necessarily the most memorable performance or even match-winning goal, but I just think the significance of it. I remember, you know, the post-match stuff with Carlos Corberan and speaking to you after the game and writing up reaction piece, it just felt like a big win. Not necessarily, I don't think it felt like, you know, we're ready to catch Leeds in the top four down now. Yeah, and obviously Leeds responded brilliantly and have gone on another great run, and the top four are sort of over the hill, and they have been for a while. But it told me that, you know, Corberan can construct and organise a side that can, and this was nothing new because Albion had seen off Ipswich at home, by the way, that could compete with and beat the better sides in this, you know, this level. We all know what happened at the end of Leicester game at home. Obviously went very close as well, didn't it? But to get to do it against Leeds, you know, big hitters down from the Premier League with their array of sort of attacking talent and firepower. I thought that was a statement win. You know, all the thing about Corbyn's form aside, I just thought that was a massive statement win in terms of the point of the season for Albion as well. Those back-to-back home wins were absolutely pivotal, weren't they? You know, we don't know, maybe without 6 points in those at the time, Albion wouldn't have held on to tops, you know, wouldn't have maintained that top six position and maybe wouldn't still be there now. I just think probably for belief and confidence. And I know it took a whack and wobbled, you know, subsequently, and there were tough moments after that into January at Norwich and away days. But we just before those two, we just had the trip to Middlesbrough, hadn't we? I missed that day. I know you were up there, and that was pretty grim, wasn't it, by all accounts? Borough away. And the away form generally at that point was grim, full stop. So those home wins were everything, really, I think, so significant. So that's the victory and, you know, win in terms of a moment I went for. And the other one, which I'm guessing you're hinting at that sort of Baggies fans may not have guessed, just in terms of moment of enjoyment, really, I went for the recent clash at Loftus Road, the 2-2, not so long ago, last month, was it? February, maybe? I just thought it was crazy. Bonkers game and really good fun to watch and report on. Not the best result, not the worst, but carnage, really. Chaos. And obviously the owner was there to see that. We had the chance to meet him the next day at the training ground, which was nice. But that night in QPR, which I quite enjoy going there. It's one of the worst to be around in the division in terms of parking, isn't it, Johnny? I mean, you kindly drove us this season. And yeah, you have to pretty much park in the nearby shopping centre and Westfields, which is like a 20-minute walk away. But that aside, it's a cracking little ground, I think. And that game just had everything, didn't it? Absolutely everything. And Kipper's save off the line, I'm not sure I'll ever forget that save. So there you go.
Yeah, it was a bit of a bonkers game. Just to add to that, I've picked out two that will sort of give us five key moments of the season. I think one, the two games at Albion have both scored four goals in, and the first one will be Preston away earlier in the campaign, quite early on. And Albion weren't in fantastic form going to Preston, and Preston were flying at the time. And, you know, still up there just at the bottom of the playoff picture. But
they had 100% record, didn't they?
They did. They did. Yeah, certainly at home anyway. And Albion went there and completely blew them away, playing, you know, a fast flowing style of football that Preston just couldn't keep up with. And I think it underlined, you know, the job that Carlos Corbran was doing, because there were some questions from certain quarters early in the season about, you know, Albion at the back, and they were too open and they were trying to play more on the front foot. And then Carlos had gone to tighten them up at the back and gone back to a five or a three, if you want to call it that. But they went to Preston and just blew them away with some fantastic football, you know, a range of goals. Nick Furlong scored from distance. Alex Mowat scored. Carl Bartley scored. You know, Matty Phillips with the deflected effort as well. And it just, I think it showed just what Albion had in their squad and what they can do when it all comes together, really. And it would be another four-goal performance that I would add into that mix of five key moments. And that would be Huddersfield a few weeks ago. And, you know, Albion fans might sort of scoff at that because it's a lower, you know, lower-end opposition. But just the contrast in what Albion did in the first period to what they did in the second, you know, they were woeful. It was their worst half of the season. They were dreadful. And it give you flashbacks to sort of previous regimes, really. But the fact that they could turn it round so significantly in the second half and play, you know, that performance in the second half was probably akin to the one for 90 minutes at Preston earlier in the season, yeah, where they just blew them away and just had far, far, far too much. And I think those performances, you know, there's loads you can chuck in there, isn't there? You know, the likes of Ipswich at home where, you know, Ipswich are flying and Albion brought them down a peg or two. You know, like you said there, you've got the Leeds game. There's other big wins in there. Coventry away, I thought, was a very, very good victory.
Yeah.
There's a lot of wins at Plymouth away, obviously another one that was a lower down opposition, but Albion were just scintillating in that second half, and that was a similar performance to Huddersfield, really, because they were pretty poor in the first. But a lot of key moments, and I think if we add to, we could add others that off the field stuff in terms of acquisitions. You know, the arrival of Mikey Johnston is going to be a very, very key moment in the season. You know, if Albion do go up, that is not a turning point, but, you know, the departure of Jeremy Sarmiento and then the arrival of Mikey Johnston was just massively, massively key. And Yeah, there's a lot of moments you could chuck in there, but for me, in terms of victories and on the field, those two wins would be right up there.
Yeah. Yeah, good shout. Yeah. It's interesting because, as you rightly say, you wouldn't necessarily pick it for the opposition, would you? But Preston does stick in my mind. You know, typically a mid-table, second-tier club, aren't they, I suppose? But we have to remember they were flying. And, yeah, that clash, that win at Huddersfield. I nearly picked the second half at Huddersfield myself, actually, because you don't often get sort of that many goals in a short space of time. It was relentless and it was clinical and it was ruthless and some wonderful goals within the madness of QPR. I almost specified Mikey Johnson's rocket there. That was his third absolute humdinger, wasn't it? But for my money, I mean, I wasn't at Plymouth, but the best of the lot. So the absolute wizard. I mean, I undernied about selecting like a breakthrough appearance from Tom Fellows. We'll probably get into him later, but again, it always sticks in my mind, the Blues away game, which was such a miserable night again, as it seems to be at St Andrews. But the one memory is him coming on, really, for his first league cameo of the season. And I suppose with Tom, the rest is history, really. But yeah, I think we've covered some good points. I mean, the late win recently over Blues at the Hawthorns, you know, Andy Vyman slotting that in 5 minutes to go was a really good moment, wasn't it? A really, really, you know, just come on, hadn't he, from memory. Just come on, just having a look at it now. Yeah, not long come on, sort of 10, 15 minutes and 85th minute winner. Thinking right in saying that was his second Albion goal, was it? Did he score before that, Vyman, or was it his first, possibly? He scored against Cardiff as well since that. So, a great line. You know, Vyman sort of became an instant hero, didn't he? And obviously doing it against Blues for his Villa connections. Sometimes they just write themselves, don't they? So, yeah, that was another top sort of moment story in the season. But, I think between us there, we've gone through the key ones, certainly. Winning at Cardiff 1-0, Sarmiento scored, didn't he, late November. Wasn't the best performance or win, but felt important at the time because away wins were few and far between. The problem was they remained few and far between after that. It didn't sort of ignite anything. It felt it might be important at the time, but no, they still struggled on the road, as we say. But yeah, most of them. Notice how we didn't touch on a certain FA Cup derby, Johnny, which is probably for the best. It can sort of stay confined to memory, can't it, I think?
Yeah, we'll leave that one in the draw for now. We're just going to talk about key players. Cox, you're going to pick three. I'm going to pick three. So who would be your sort of top three key performers or top performers this season and why?
Our players of the season so far, I suppose, with that caveat. 8 games to go, hopefully more. I think my pick for player of the season is probably still Cedric Kiprer. Fully deserved, I would say. An unbelievable campaign, I think he's had. I really do. I think by around Christmas, New Year, I think he was a clear, outright favourite to win the award. Maybe November, December. I do think, and my sort of second pick is Alex Mowat. I do think the midfielder is now pushing him close. I do. I mean, the heavy, heavy irony of those being both out on loan at Championship rivals last season, yeah, farmed out by Steve Bruce as unimportant and not wanted or needed. The debate, obviously, about them both being out of contract, obviously, this summer, which will rage on and we'll debate about another day, I'm sure. But yeah, Kiprer, for me, still leads the way. He's a player I was aware of before he rocked up at the Hawthorns because I saw him play for Wigan a few times and he stood out, but obviously in the caveat that it was a level below. So he stood out at that level and you kind of wonder, it looked a bit of a bargain for Albion back then and you wonder how he'd settle division above. To me, it looked like he had the physicality, but he's been a joy to watch this season, hasn't he? He really has. He's quite a character. You can tell that from how he is on the field. But he's a proper defender. Yes. He likes to take a chance or two with the ball. He likes to, but that he likes to pass it out along, you know, along the back or whatever. But that's the way Alvin, that's the way Carlos Corberan wants to play. So he's going to take his chances. Look at Blackburn away on the opening day. Gave away the first second goal. Gave away the goal, didn't he? And Alvin went on to lose that. And like, season could have been over before it started. And I vividly remember Carlos Corberan saying, I had a word with him after and I said, is that going to affect what you do for us this season, the way you play for me this season? Kypros said no. And the rest is history, really. He's been absolutely immense, for my money, one of, if not the better performing centre-halves in the division this season. Probably gone under the radar. I haven't seen him in any sort of top your rated list. But for my money, given Albin's defensive record, one of the best, most, one of the most clean sheets, fewest goals against, he's been the standout man in it. Yeah, he should be right up there. So I think he's been incredible. And I think Alex Mowat, his fellow former loanee, is a close second for me. Really impressed throughout. I think Mowat's been a bit more of a slow burner. Probably took, I'd have to check, but late September, October for him to be a regular sort of starter. But he and Yakushlu in that central midfield have built up such a partnership. And Mowat, I've always known what a technician he's been. Yeah, I didn't see the start of his Albion career where he scored those beautiful goals, but they were no surprise to me. I'd seen him play for other clubs, obviously starting with Leeds, but his energy, for me, impresses me most. He's a pressing machine from midfield, and Carlos Corberan must love it that he's top technical talent for this division, but also never stop running. And I think Carlos said recently, you know what you're going to get with Mowat. Proper old-school sort of British footballer work rate. I think Carlos sort of suggested he's a proper British footballer. And he, in terms of giving his absolute all for the side no matter what. And I just love his wholehearted, sort of full-blooded performances. And he's a real talent with the ball. And I think when he's playing, when he's ticking with the ball, I think that'll be in tick. The same can be said for Yakushlu, but I think Mowat's had a better season. And they're my top two, Johnny. I've got one more, but I can break it off.
You carry on. You're in a role. You carry
hand
on.
It through, okay. Well, I think those. I think those for me are the two standout players this season. However, there are plenty more in this conversation, I would say, and I'm about to name one more. You've got two, haven't you? There are more honourable mentions really that didn't even make our five. And yeah, I say that about Kipra and Mowat being standout players and Kipra being top of the pile. But I think it has been a squad performance this season. You know, no 25 goal striker, no kind of 10 goal midfielder or winger, you know, stealing the show really. Yes, you know, we could argue Mikey Johnson since Jan, but on such a basis, my third shout is Alex Palmer. I think I should have looked it up before we started, Johnny, but with the amount of clean sheets he has kept, he has to be included. I think he's maybe at times underappreciated. I think what he does and what he's done this season. I think he's shot stopping what certainly one on one when sides go through against him. I always have a confidence that Palmer can sort of stretch himself, make himself big, and make a big save. I really do. I know there's been some goals that have beaten him this season, which may not have. However. Look at the goals against Colham. Look at the clean sheet, tallies in the Championship this season. And they tell a story. And yes, look, the Carlos Corberan team is built on organisation and a defensive platform. I get all of that. But it still needs a top quality keeper to get the job done. And I think he's done that. I think he's had such an interesting sort of journey, really, this term. We could have left, nearly left. Obviously, Burnley tried hard. And at Albion, Palmer resisted. Now, Albion were in a situation where, you know, having to raise funds, having to sell players. Obviously, Palmer, a homegrown prospect, you're looking at pure profit from his sale of an academy graduate. But he knew he was number one here, and he was set for his first full season as number one, and grasped it with both hands for me. Obviously, yeah, Luton, wasn't it? Pardon me, Luton that won. Wanted Alex Palmer, and Luton obviously went on and got Kaminski, didn't they, from Blackburn, who for my money is not the keeper of Alex Palmer. And Kaminski's gone on and been number one this season, hasn't he, at at Kenilworth. So, look, whether Palmer in his heart of heart looks at that and thinks I could have been a Premier League number one this season with all of that going on, I don't know. But he's probably, in his words, living his Albion dream. He worked so, waited best part of 10 years, hasn't he, to get the number one shirt here. And I think he's excelled with it. I really do. I think he's done his reputation no harm at all. I think most in and around the game would have him as, if not the best, then one of the best goalkeepers in this division now. The statistics speak for themselves. People listening may talk about his distribution, which I don't think is among his better qualities. However, are every keepers really, you know, below the obvious ones and at the top of the game in this country? Even they kick the ball out of play every now and then or give it to opposition. You know, you're not going to get that. You just aren't. So I think Palmer's been immense, sensational. Look, 36 goals conceded from 38 games. That record's nearly as good as Leicester's and just trails Leeds. So that says everything. I think he's second in the clean sheet tally behind Meslier of Leeds. Yes, 17 to 16. And the next best is 12. So, I've been really, really impressed with Palmer. And I think he deserves all the credit he gets. And they'd be my top three in that order, probably, Johnny. And there's a few honourable mentions, and you're going to get into a couple now who haven't quite made the cut in my list. But it's an interesting debate because I reckon you could make fair cases for 5, 6, 7, to be honest, this season.
Yeah, you probably could. I'm going to go with a couple of obvious ones and a bit of a left field one. The one would be, I'm going to go with Tom Fellows, just purely because of his breakthrough campaign, the fact that he's grasped his chance. And Baggies fans might have read that I wrote a very glowing piece last week where I've tipped him for full England honours. You know, I know he's only made his under-20s debut this weekend, but I fully believe there are not many wingers out there like Tom Fellows. And he showed, I think the piece you did earlier in the week as well with Rich Beale, his attitude marries up alongside his quality. And I think we've seen that. He's tenacious. He works hard. He's strong. Yeah. And I think he's just made such a difference. And he's taken a lot of us by surprise. Don't get me wrong. Back in pre-season, he played a big part. And you kind of got the feeling that he was going to be involved this season. He's got his chance. And he's grabbed it with both hands. 5 goals, 4 assists. Across, I think, 28 games. But I think that's all competitions. But he's been fantastic, you know, 5 goals from 14 shots as well. His conversion rate is pretty decent. Mm. I think I've just got stats in front of me now. He's only beaten by Mikey Johnson in terms of conversion rate for Albion this season.
I believe it's 5 assists, Johnny, actually, because I noticed that the other day, but I found out that that's just league. So, you know, his stats are impressive.
His stats are impressive. I think he's a shining light. There's been some good success stories for Albion this season, you know, off the field. We've had the stuff of the owner and et cetera. And at a time where Albion's academy, maybe not the academy took a bit of a battering, but in terms of Albion getting their players plucked away, you know, there was players, the majority have gone to Villa. I think there was a youngster who went to Arsenal, who's now on loan at Plymouth. And there were players that Albion was sort of losing at certain periods. And then you see them reemerge, you know, the likes of Morgan Rogers when he went to Aston Villa is a player who Albion lost to Man City a few years ago. And the academy, not the academy's reputation took a battering, but in terms of Albion just not being able to keep hold of these players, and the fact that they've got one in Tom Fellows who's come through, you know, he's done the hard yards at Crawley last season in a pretty sticky situation, and the fact that he's come back in and done so well and just grasped his chance speaks volumes. The other one I'm going to say is Brandon Thomas Asante, purely for his goal rates. He's in double figures. That is with you know, a couple of injuries as well. No one at the moment he's been coming back from, and the fact that he continues to be, well, he wasn't for a period, but he is again now. Albion's only recognised, you know, centre forward. I know Andreas Weimann's there, but he can play in a number of positions. And he scored some important goals this season, and I think we've seen that Albion have kind of missed him when he's been out. I know Jed Wallace has done a really sterling job up front, and Albion's form has been quite good, but I think there has been a marked difference to not having Thomas Asante around. And I think he's just, you know, he will continue to get a stick because people forget about his price tag, forget about his situation, and the fact that he's had a massive, massive, massive burden on his shoulders since he came into the football club because of injuries to other players and availability and maybe not being able to bring in strikers. But the fact that he is, you know, obviously Callum Marshall is there, but he's very raw and Corbrand spoken about him and explained that situation. He's the only senior centre forward, and I think he's done a cracking job. And the other one I'm going to stick in there is someone who I still played a lot of games. It doesn't feel like he's played lot of games, but it's Eric Peters, purely for the job that he's done coming into the side. And I think it sort of spills over from last season. He was playing an awful lot of games last season. He played a lot of games early on in this campaign. Had a bit of a spell out of the side from sort of October to January when the injuries hit again. He's played 25 times this season. And he's only sort of gone out of the squad on the back of, I think it was before the Huddersfield game, he found himself out of the side. And then he came back in for Bristol City but went off injured. I think he's been fantastic. And I'm just looking through some stats now. I'm going to let you now, Coxie, just carry on talking about Peters. I'm just going to work out some sort of clean sheets, because when Peters has been in the side, you know, Albion haven't conceded a lot of goals this season overall, but when he's been in the side, the defensive record looks pretty good. So I want you to carry on waxing lyrical about Eric Peters while I do a bit of badding up.
I think it's a good shout, Johnny. I do. I know not all listening may necessarily agree with it, but when you factor in everything about Peters, I think it's been just such a smart, solid, free transfer, hasn't it? Just a really, for everything we've seen on the pitch, he's probably played 50-odd games for Albion now. You know, he's 36, isn't he, almost, or turning 36. I think we don't, you know, what we don't see as well is his mannerism and character behind the scenes, I think, is influential. I really do. So I think that's important, and you can't sort of discard that. I mean, look at his personal circumstance with, you know, the ill health of his wife this season, really, that he's, you know, clearly had to contend with, that would have been a massive burden. You know, what respect, really, to continue working and performing how he has. And yeah, he had to spend, as you say, a good few months away from it. And we probably thought, he'll, you know, probably go in the summer and we won't really see him play again. And all of a sudden, as you say, he had to play for what, 6-8 weeks, and did a sterling job. How many games was it in a row? Saturday, Tuesday. I'm sure not easy at the stage of his career, but we've just seen, I think, for the last, 16, 18 months, a classy former Premier League player, committed as ever, just winding, sort of, not winding down, but, you know, the latter part of his career, still showing what he can do. I think it's a great shout. And yeah, left field one that, you know, maybe many wouldn't select, but I think plenty would agree with you, Johnny.
Yeah. Conceded 20 goals in 23 league games this season with 10 clean sheets. I think he's done an absolute fantastic job. We could be here all day waxing lyrical about
it. Yeah, Johnny, I have to say, we didn't discuss all of these before, and I thought your left field shout might have been Furlong. And I know we were going through on message, weren't we, a few possible names, and I think Furlong's had a largely excellent campaign, and it's just got progressively better. I think the arrival of Pippa sparked him, and made probably a kick up the backside, improved performances, hence Pippa not really getting in. I think probably since, I don't know, Christmas time, turn of the new year, maybe a bit later, maybe January, Feb, it's gone up a level. And I think in the last few games, it's gone up another level. Yeah, I think we're seeing the best football, most consistent football Furlong's played for a good while. And Carl Bartley's just been excellent, hasn't he? Either side of his injury, colossal. Honourable mention to him. And how good was Matt Phillips? How good was Matt Phillips before his injury? Such a loss, wasn't he? Obviously, we know, unfortunately, Albion tend to lose Matt Phillips to injury, but that doesn't sort of take away from how well he was playing and how influential he was. And maybe ditto John Swift, Johnny, back to, you know, August, September, he was Albion's most dangerous attacker, wasn't he, by a country mile? You know, top scorer, 6 goals by early October. He was immense, but just hasn't looked the same player since coming back, sadly. And point I wanted to make on your BTA shout, 10 goals, you know, double figures by the turn of the year, by mid-January. For a striker who's not seen as, a regular scorer at this level, that was some going, wasn't it? And, yeah, unfortunate to have picked up a sort of injury around February time since that has obviously slowed the progress on the goals front. But you were right to shout out Thomas Asante, actually, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's done really well. Just a chance to shout out for our sponsor, as always, all our podcasts here at the Express and Star and the Shop Star are sponsored by the Kettle and Toaster Man, your graded product specialist, who has a mountain of top products for even better prices, as we have a few weeks ago. He has got some fantastic range of Swan Retro fridge freezers. Now, I've never really thought about what my fridge freezer looks like, but these fridge freezers are absolutely banging down at the Kettle of Toast, man. He's got a superb range of them. You can get your hands on a retro fridge freezer, all sorts of colours. I've picked out a nice little green one that looked quite good in my kitchen. £300, absolute bargain. And he's got so many of them down there. And as we said, top brands, top prices. He's got everything. If you want it, it's probably down here at the Kettle and Toast Man. So if you want to go and have a look at what he's got, head down to Thorns Road in Briley Hill. Or if you want to do it from the comfort of your own sofa, head to kettleandtoasterman.co.uk. Right, we've got quite a few baggies questioned today and quite a variety as well. So we're going to work through a few of these. I've put it with a born international break. Rob Williams has replied, not if you're Welsh, we've got a biggie coming up. That was a big one this evening. It certainly is a big one, Rob, and I'm sure, you know, all these guys down at the Baggies think I'm a fully fledged Welsh. I'll be keeping an eye on that game tonight for my compatriots there over the border or on the border. Leo Watkins has asked, can you put me in touch with Cox's agent? Could do with a couple of months off for a year or two. Oh, that's a deep dig, that is, Coxie. I'll leave that one there for you to answer.
I'm going to rise above. Insert the Jose Mourinho gif. I prefer not to speak.
Dr. Strange has got in touch with a bit of a jovial one. Would the current Baggies defeat the current England team? I'd fancy their chances. Yeah, that'd be an interesting match. I'm not at full pelt anyway, not with the shackles taken off, but we know there's a lot of debate at the moment about Gareth Southgate and how
I'd fancy Tom Fellows against whatever left back's playing for England.
I fancy him against Chilwell, given his performance the other night against Brazil.
That was not a thriller, was it?
Yeah, West Ham 30. Any news on the strikers? We know Daldike is out for a while, but how close are the rest to full fitness? Are we expecting Josh Badger anytime soon, Coxie? I know we've heard little snippets from Carlos Corbett on that, but what's the latest?
We are. I think he was little caveat here. Yeah, Albion are training now as we speak at the Hawthorns, which some Albion fans will be out watching. I think they sold around 3,000 tickets for that. And we'll have some details of that later. But I know that's going on as we speak. Matt Phillips is training in it. Not a striker, but that's worthy of note. And I think Phillips will probably be in the squad on Friday at Millwall. What a boost that is, by the way. Injured since early December. Be amazed if Phillips starts. But yeah, I fancy him to be in the squad. On the Madger front, he was slightly behind. But from memory, speaking to Corran the last time or the time before, I think he was due to do some training this week, Josh Madger. I don't know if that was full team training or, you know, full pelt, full contact, all of that. But again, I think next Monday at home to Watford in the second of that double header is potentially ambitious. Whether Stoke away the following Saturday is also perhaps a little bit ambitious. But that's I think we're near the ballpark of where, if certainly he's doing some part of training this week, perhaps going into next week is the expectation or aim of full training, full contact training, which you know is clearly too late for Watford. Half a chance for Stoke, perhaps, and then there's a home game that midweek, isn't there, on a Wednesday, Rotherham, isn't it? So around that area, which I think that's what the Saturday's the 6th, isn't it? And then I think Rotherham on the midweek is the 10th. So yeah, looking around the middle of the month, I think that was the last we heard. And yeah, just having another option, another senior recognised striker will be bliss, really, won't it, for fans and certainly for Carlos Corbran. I mean, he's talking through players of the season there. And when you mention Josh Madger, you just remember how much you have to feel for him. And I know how much we all feel for Daryl DK, but in terms of debut seasons, Madger's had it rough, hasn't he? He's really had it rough. It was kind of getting up to speed on the cusp of that first start before Bristol City away, where he was victim of a terrible tackle that should have seen Albion awarded a late penalty, shouldn't it? Certainly according to Carlos Corbran. But out for a couple of months as a result of that. And then I don't think we need to discuss what happened at Sunderland, do we? It finally started his first game and his comeback. And victim to a truly awful challenge in that game that fully ruptured all of his ankle ligaments. So it's been rough. It's been really rough. And that was what, Sunderland away, was mid-December. So 4 months, realistically, for this second setback. until he'll be back, and how much can we expect from him on his return? Perhaps not too much. Perhaps he's got to build himself up, but he only needs to be in the 6-yard box once to poke home, doesn't he, for a potentially all important crucial goal from the bench or whatever. So I think his return will be a massive lift, really, in terms of figures and personnel, like Phillips. And before too long, Johnny, in the next game or two, certainly in the next handful of games, and Carlos Corberan won't mind this at all, but he'll be having squad selection, to narrow it down to 20, really. You know, touch wood, no one else drops out. They'll start having to leave players out of the whole squad, and certainly will not be able to say that there aren't the bodies available.
Yeah. Clint McCormick's asked, is anyone or was anyone from the Express and start the opening training session? I believe it was today. So no.
Yeah, as we were speaking, yeah.
How different do you think these are to regular training sessions? And do you think there were Millwall or Watford staff there watching? Interesting. I can't imagine it'd be that different under Corbran. I imagine it'd still be pretty full.
No. I've spoke to one or two people who are there watching, actually, as sort of today. And I gather it's as intense as ever. You know, it's not eased off, or the head coach is not any more relaxed because it's at the stadium. I'm sure there'll be a lot of meet and greet afterwards and photos and signatures and stuff. But Carlos Corbran will not take his foot off or take it any easier because it's in front of a few thousand fans at the stadium. Absolutely not. Certainly now it's full focus on Millwall and, you know, Good Friday at the Den. So good point about opposition scouts. I'd like to think not. I think in football you never know. You know, we all remember Spygate. That was fun a few years back, wasn't it? Involving Leeds. Would Corbran have been at Leeds during Spygate? I think he probably would. Probably. That was Bielsa pre-pandemic, wasn't it? Corbran would have been there. Never asked him about that, but that would be an interesting conversation to have with the Albion boss. Who knows? We weren't there today, unfortunately. Would have been nice to go to, I suppose, if not for a bit of a colour piece, really, just to talk about what, you know, who was training there and what was going on. We have to hold fort, don't we, really, at ENS Towers. And while the international football stops Albion football, it doesn't stop the publication of our newspaper or websites, does it? So we have, we've been working on several things during today. But certainly know we've got some photos to come from later on of training, and we'll get some details on how that went. It's always a good one, I think, for supporters during, you know, school holidays or whatever, to be able to get down and have a little peek behind the curtain of what goes on, and anything that involves meet and greet and players, you know, staff making the day of fans should be at the forefront of football, really, in my opinion. And just a mention to Albion's Foundation, who obviously today were named EFL Championship Community Club of the Year, weren't they, Johnny? So, you know, what an accolade that is, and fully deserved, because Albion's Foundation is so impressive.
Tom Hunt has asked, which one current Baggies player would you have in your Euro 2024 England squad? Very good question. I'd chuck Tom Fellers.
Do they have to be English?
Well, yeah, it's the England squad.
Well, yeah.
Come on,
maybe
Coxie.
A stupid question. Yeah, I get that, yeah.
Tom Fellers is in there for me, chucking me.
Well, that's annoying, because I was going to say Johnson. Who did you say then? Sorry, Fellers.
Tom Fellers.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, let's have it right. If he was a sub late on in games in that tournament, he would do a job. I have no doubt about it, Tom Fellers. He would set things up. He would run havoc. If we're having any Albion player, you know, sort of good enough or talented enough to break into the squad, I might lean towards Mikey Johnson. But in terms of the English one, I think Fellows has to be the shout-out, probably, doesn't it? I think he'd do some damage. Although, it has to be said, England are okay for his position, aren't they? With Saka, Foden, and they're not sure. Although Fellows can play on the left, which is,
He's got a bit
less options on that flank, aren't there? With the likes of Rashford and others like that, who are sort of a bit more bit party. Good question, that.
Anders Grott has asked, are we likely to see any contract renewals confirmed between now and the end of the campaign, or is it routine for most of them to be kept under wraps until the released and retained list is published?
Good question. There's no hard and sort of written in stone answer to this. They're, it's sort of done ad hoc, as we saw with Tom Fellows. I know the Tom Fellows contract saga was the one the club really felt they had to attend to and had to sort and address. And that's not to say that they don't want to keep other players out of contract. I believe they do, but we can't underplay the financial situation, regardless of Shilan Patel being Albion's new owner. Yeah, if Albion's new owner was Elon Musk or Mark Zuckerberg or Bill Gates, you know, or any other wealthy person in the world, Albion would still have to address their squad value, wage situation, the club's financial situation, in line with league rules. So there are hard and heavy negotiations to continue with. That's just how it is. Clearly, there are big earners, not just a couple, but across the board, really, and it needs to be a bit of a line in the sand, and the whole structure needs to be readdressed. Clearly, the summer is a massive opportunity for that. But I think clearly there are a few players who have done wonderfully this season who might think, look, I can explore my options here realistically. Yes, I've got some loyalty to Albion and Carlos Corberan and probably want to be a part of it, I'm sure. But yeah, they're all professionals and they all have to think about ultimately themselves and their families. And if they can go and get something bigger in terms of finances elsewhere, then I'm sure they're going to have a look and give themselves a chance. So I don't think player or club will be in a rush specifically, really. I think Albion will have wage figures in terms of what they're willing to pay for each player, and things are tight enough that they won't be drawn over that in a negotiating battle. So that's where it is, and that's why I don't think these things will be completed quickly, really. And it'll be a very interesting summer, I would say, in that regard. I don't think there'll be a lack of things to talk or but write about in that out of contract regard come June, July time, Johnny.
Alex Bagizal has asked, say the miracle happens and we do go up, who in the current squad would you be looking to keep slash sell? In your opinion, the need to balance the books wouldn't be as strong, so we could afford to keep some players. We might have to if we don't go up. I'm going to narrow this question down, Coxie. In an ideal world, Albion have gone up. You keep one player. There's one player you keep beyond, you know, all doubt, all costs, and there's a player that you sell. Who would you be going for?
Okay. Is this of the out of contract lot, Johnny, or
anyone? No, just anyone. Just anyone. Who would you be wanting to keep in that Albion squad? You know, say there's interest in all the Albion squad. They've gone up.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's trying to pick them off. Who would you keep? Who's the most important player for Albion to keep as an Albion player for next season?
I want to just give you, I know you're desperately pushing me for one name here, Johnny. That's tough. Really tricky. Sorry for the dead space. I'm going to give you some names. There's a couple of caveats next to them. One being Tom Fellows. And the caveat next to him is that I think Albion keep him anyway because of the contract situation. I think he stays at the club. I shout for Mikey Johnson. If Albion go up and finances make it possible, you know, and the Ireland international himself is happy to move away from Celtic and have a Premier League home, then him for me. I know he's a loan player and technically not an Albion player, but he'd be my shout realistically. Beyond that, tricky beyond those two. But yeah, I think I've given you a bit of an answer with those two. I mean, I think in Kipper and Mowat, there's two I'd there, Kipper, and Alex. Yeah. Kipper. Alex Palmer as well. I think both Kipper and Mowat could be regular players in the Premier League. I'm not necessarily saying star players, but I think they could both adapt and adjust. And Palmer too, I think, could be a Premier League goalkeeper. If the rules were anyone, I'd say, you know, if Albion went up, sign Mikey Johnson. Great. You know, he'd be the player. I think Fellows will stay anyway, but I'd want them to keep hold of him for obviously the future. Don't get me wrong, if someone wants to come in with 20 million plus, you know, then maybe there's a conversation to be had. But I think Kipper and Mowat, if you're going to push me on one of them, perhaps I'd lean towards Cedric Kipper there. And sell is tricky, Johnny. If Albion went up and those want to sell, that's putting me on the
on the spot a bit. Do you have an answer for that?
I'd sell Carlin Grant.
Yes, absolutely. I mean,
need to reduce. They got to the Premier League. There isn't that great need to reduce the wage bill. But Carlin Grant arrived in the Premier League. I'm going to spend a lot of money on him. He's probably going to be among the top higher earners in the club. But he's still got a bit left on his contract. They can still get a bit of money for him. He hasn't done badly at Cardiff.
Albion are still paying, and
I think it's just time to cut losses, sell him, even if that sale has some of that has to be used to offset what Albion owe Huddersfield. So be it. I think it could well even
be another loan for Grant next season. I don't see a world where he's part of the squad or in Corbrand's plans or anything like that. If it has to be, because of the makeup of that deal and the finances, if it has to be another loan where, like Cardiff, a club are contributing to a chunk of his wage, I think Albion will be fine with that, regardless of the division. Look, obviously, a sale's better for anyone, isn't it? But Albion still have to pay Huddersfield. You know, there's no, like, the next club takes it on. I think, from my understanding, Albion have to pay Huddersfield. So, let's see on that one. But I don't see him being in Albion's squad next season. I think he's played regularly enough for Cardiff to show clubs in the Championship that he can be a regular option and do well in spells. So I don't think the loan's done Grant or Albion any harm, I would say. But that's definitely one to sort. And good shout out for him on the sale. So I'll slide down off the fence and go with your answer, I think.
Yeah, you're going to ask two more questions. Leo Watkins had a bit of a jab you before, Coxon, but he got in touch with a serious question, sort of less football related. He's put a serious journalism question. Now, he's put, we've reached PLC close in the mail. I'll just correct that. That's their sort of, they've sort of decreased their Albion coverage. Not that I can guarantee the Birmingham Mail is still very much open for business. He's put more ads than ever on social media. How's your jobs changed in the last few years? Is it harder work or is it just different? It's an interesting question. I was reading this before we come on and had a bit of a think about it. I'm just going to relate it to sort of one of the topics this season. You know, we've had the off-season, the off-field stuff with Gouch and Lye and people wanting answers about him, you know, not just this season, for the last 2 or 3 years. And we've had, there's certain Twitter accounts, I'm not going to name them, but there's certain Albion fans that you get to know, certainly the ones that come with negative criticism of the job that we do, which is part of the course when you're working in football and you're working in the media. Sort of criticise us for maybe not finding out enough information. They want us to do this, they want us to do that. And I think that it lends itself, it sort of marries up with this question, because maybe sort of 10 years ago, when there was a lot more resources in our industry, there would have been probably the opportunity to go and do an investigation on Gouch and Lye and who was behind him and all this. You know, we've seen all the stories that have been written regarding sort of the network behind Gouch and Lye, etc., and getting answers and doing this digging work. But I think our industry is one where resources, you know, it's not just our company, it's a lot of companies. And we've seen it, you know, obviously with, you mentioned Reach there, they've cut an awful lot of their writers from not just West Brom, but around the country. So in our industry, companies are always cutting resources. And I think if there was more pairs of hands, if it was an era where an Albion reporter like yourself, Lewis, was solely the Albion reporter, then those stories that maybe some people have criticised us for not doing might have been, we would have been able to look at them. But in this day and age, you know, I know that Albion fans will see on the tin that you are the Express and Stars ENS correspondent, but that is not own, that is probably a small part of your job. And in terms of myself as well, you know, the Baggies broadcast and these videos and writing about Albion is a very much a small part of the job that I do as well. So I think if there's a change in the job in the last few years that Leo has asked, that would probably be it. And it's not a unique situation to our company at the Express and Star and the company that we're owned by. It's across the media, really, and certainly the written media.
Yeah, if getting out to China and knocking on office doors over there was a possibility, I'd on behalf of supporters and, you know, representing our paper, I'd love to and jump at the chance to do that. However, you know, let's be real, I suppose. I think you put it relatively well there, Johnny. From our perspective, we've had an interesting sort of, in terms of the paper and our work, interesting times of late. of public knowledge, our company changed hands and sort of working model changed ever so slightly. With that, we obviously had a big change to a subscription service in terms of a paywall. Not on everything, but obviously behind certain pieces and articles. And that slightly altered how we bring the coverage, I'm sure. Obviously, I know things like the Baggies Broadcast, the podcast is freely available. And, you know, there'll be those listening to this who are subscribers and those that aren't. And look, that's obviously a big world to step into and a big change, realistically. And look, we fully appreciate how hard times are, as much as anyone else. You know, we're not millionaires from this industry, are we, Johnny? We are people that struggle to pay bills like everyone, and know that everything's expensive. So look, we get it totally, and obviously we're just trying to do our jobs and just bring coverage and tell stories and bring news. So that's been a change. Yeah, slightly tweaked way we do things through the website and through socials and that, but I hope Baggies fans continue to enjoy reading and listening. Ultimately,
I can ask one final question from Sunil Patel, who asked, don't want to jinx it, but let's say the playoffs are secured before the final day, if you were Carlos, would you rest players or keep full strength to keep momentum going into them? Interesting.
I think you've got to keep momentum personally.
Keep momentum, but I think you'll do a bit of both. I think there will be players that will be rested. Say Albion, you know, we've said 3 wins from the 8 games. Say Albion go win 3 in a row now. That's 5 games to go, and they've probably got a playoff spot. I think it'll be a mixture of both. There'll be players that will play. There'll be rotation, but it won't be the case of changing the squad.
I think you've got to find a way to do both. Haven't you? Find a way to ensure that there's still some momentum in terms of performances and results while being... Yeah, as you say, rotating bodies, and there's a fine balance to be struck there, isn't there? And you can get it ever so wrong slightly either way, but I'm not sure there's any hard and fast rule for momentum into the playoffs. You often find it's the team that just scrapes in, don't you? And the team that's been third all season struggles or whatever. So look, I think whoever Albion face, they're likely going to finish 5th, aren't they? You know, might be 6th, who knows? But I think whoever Albion face in that, be it 4th or maybe 3rd, it's going to be tricky, isn't it? Let's be honest. Over 2 legs, it's going to be very tough. But I suppose more on that over the next few podcasts, I guess. And we'll have a bit of a deep dive into who Albion could face. But that picture of the top 4 is sort of ever changing, isn't it? We hope Albion's position of 5th is not ever changing, as it's been very much secure for a long old time.
Yeah, it has indeed. Baggies fans, thanks for your questions. Almost out of time. We're going to have a little glance forward to this weekend doubleheader. Coxie, in terms of changes, I don't think we'll see the same side on Friday that we'll see on Monday. But where would you see any changes? Let's start with Millwall. Can you see any Carlos Corbrand tweaking anything from the Bristol City win?
This is the big debate, and I'd start Thomas Asante up front. I think, you touched on it earlier, didn't you, Johnny? I think it's time for the return of a natural striker. Seen him a couple of cameos return before the break, wasn't quite ready to start or deemed that way. I think, as well as Wallace has done, and he's done very well, got the goal last time out, getting back out wide and get a presence up top of an out-and-out striker. I think that's what I'd do personally for this one. Whether Carlos Corbrand opts to stick with Wallace and then maybe do Thomas Asante for the home game with Watford, possibly. But that's how I see it. And like, it's an argument, isn't it? Then between you're probably 4-3, really, with Wallace, Fellows, Johnson and Dean Garner, and who might have to miss out. And yeah, it's a tough call, but it's nice problems to have, to be honest. Probably a debate for the back line as well. Kyle Bartley didn't start Bristol City game, did he?
No.
Did he come on at half time for Peters? There was no real that I'm aware of concern or problem with Bartley due to that, I don't think. So like, if they're fit and available as expected, for me it would be the 4 with Bartley and Kipra in the heart of the defence. That's how I'd go anyway.
Yeah, do you think he'll tweak anything for Watford? Anyone could come in. Obviously we've got Yannam Villa we saw a little bit of, you know, the previous game. You know, as you said there, Matt, you expect Matt Phillips to potentially be in the squad on Friday. You know, do we see a potential cameo at some point from him on maybe Monday, or You know, are there any other changes you made? You got John Swift, who's still, you know, wouldn't say he's knocking on the door, but he's found himself sort of out of sorts lately. What do you think
Vyman
about that?
Vyman as well, I guess.
Vyman, yeah, returning to the squad.
I think the scope, Friday, Monday, you tend to see changes, don't you? And look, Albion might be brilliant on Friday and you almost don't want to. You want to reward them and go with the same 11. Can you from a Friday to a Monday? Possibly. I think, I don't think it's probably unheard of that there's no changes for a Friday, Monday, but I think the likelihood is that there will be, and Corran will sort of weigh up, yeah, okay, if X and Y don't start on Friday, then you know, maybe be ready to start on Monday. I think that's probably the wise way to play it. And yeah, and V is an interesting shout, Johnny. I don't suspect he'll be ready to start. I'd be surprised if he was ready to even start on the Monday, to be honest. But perhaps in the games after that, he might be. He was very promising in that little cameo, wasn't he? And I think the international break would have been good for him. I think he's got himself well up in the pecking order, just behind Okoye and Mowat now. I think Phillips, yeah, would Phillips be quite ready to come in on the Monday? But it feels like maybe a little bit soon, a little bit of a risk when there are other bodies to come in. You mentioned Vyman, you know, Dean Garner, Swift. Obviously, there are a multitude of options, really. And yeah, I think there'll be a couple of changes, won't there? But it'll be interesting to see if Albion do, you know, really well on Friday and play well, and no one sort of deserves to come out the side. How Corbin will quite play that for the game that is what 72 hours later.
Yeah, be interesting. Interesting to see. Hopefully, it's a fruitful Easter weekend. Baggies fans, there you go, Coxie. As always, thanks for your time. After a dull weekend, we're back to it now for the final push. Hopefully, Albie can get over the line sooner rather than later. Safe travels to those heading down to the capital on Friday. And until next time, from me and Coxie, boing, boing.
Boing, boing.